Sport on Highland, brought to you by michaelmurphysports.ie, now offering free next day delivery on orders over €85.
A very good evening. Welcome along to another edition of The Score. Coming up on tonight's programme, we'll be joined once again by Leon Blanche of Boyle Sports. We'll get his predictions in our Ahead of the Game section. Martin McHugh will be discussing this week's GAA stories, Northwest related. Plus, we will, of course, be looking ahead to the All-Ireland semi-finals. Cavan take on Dublin and Tipperary take on Mayo. And it's with that Cavan-Dublin game we're going to start. It's a huge tie, of course, for the Ulster champions, the Breffni County. They won their first provincial title in 23 years when they beat Donegal in that provincial decider just under 2 weeks ago. But they've got another big test to come. It will be the toughest test of the year as they take on the mighty Dublin, the 5 in a row All-Ireland champions, chasing, of course, a 6th title in a row. The last team to beat Dublin in the championship was Donegal under Jim McGuinness in 2014. Ahead of the Ulster final, we caught up with Damien Donoghue of Shannonside FM and of the We Are Cavan podcast. So as they look into an All-Ireland semi-final, we thought we'd once again go to Cavan and join Damien again to get the vibes ahead of another huge clash for Mickey Graham's side. Well, Damien, it's great to have you back on the Score programme in Highland. I know Mickey Graham and the players at this stage will have come well down from the euphoria of winning the Ulster final. What about the rest of you?
No, my head's still spinning, Oisin. As I said to somebody, I'm really enjoying Cloud Nine. I want to live here forever. So I do. I spoke to an Armagh man yesterday who's heavily involved in football and was down, James Daly, the former Cavan Ladies manager. And he was saying that you know, in Armagh, we think we love our football, but if there's an under 14 game around here in Cavan, there could be 300 people at it. You know, that's the level of craziness you have for football. It's been, the COVID has not been mentioned once in the last 2 weeks around Cavan. In fact, there was numbers there. I think we've gone 4 days in a row without any COVID cases. So the evidence is that Ulster final victories can also be a killer of COVID. It's good as washing your hands. So it is. So That's exactly it, Oisin. Yeah. But look, it, we're enjoying it.
Yeah, you have to, because it doesn't happen too often. In your case, you've waited a very, very long time. And speaking before the Ulster final, Damien, you told us that Cavan would need an extraordinary performance and Donegal would need to have an extraordinary bad day. Yes, both of those scenarios come into play, but there was a bit more into the one for Cavan, wasn't there?
There was. I've been following Cavan since my earliest memory was my first communion day. Getting my first communion and hopping in the car to Clonus to see Cavan play Monaghan in the Ulster Championship in 1988. And since that, I've never ever seen a performance like that from a Cavan team. It was full of intensity, full of desire, hard work, honesty of effort, and good quality football, mixing up running game with long ball, direct high ball to the square, and lads making great support plays coming off the shoulder. So it was the most complete performance I've ever seen from Cavan. And while definitely Donegal were off their stride a bit, how much of that was under the pressure that Cavan created and how much of it was down to complacency, nobody can ever tell you. It's going to be something that every individual is going to have to look at themselves and try to come up with their own reasoning for it. But I do think it came to pass that definitely was the best Cavan performance that we've seen in 30 plus years. You know, so that was going to help Cavan a long, long way. And then I think sometimes people underestimate how difficult it is to turn on the switch when it's not happening for you in a game. And the good start, I think, was crucial to Cavan. Getting 3 points up or 4 points up early doors, I think, was a huge part of Cavan, that they put Donegal on the back foot. And probably the script actually played out perfectly then, because the black card meant Donegal got those few scores to put them back in front, left them ahead at half time. But even at half time, talking with yourselves and a few other Donegal people, you didn't feel like yous were going well, and we felt like we were going well. And 2 points down, it felt more like Cavan were ready for this, for the victory at that point. But it was definitely like Cavan's overall performance was as impressive as we've seen in a very long time.
Yeah. You do, of course, have a huge game this weekend against Dublin. Mickey Graham, I'm sure, will be putting the guys through their paces at a very high tempo, despite the short turnaround as you head into to semi-final. It was a bruising Ulster final, to say the least, as well. Damien, we've all seen the pictures of Thomas Galligan with the eye, and we had a number of players going off that. The man who scored the goal, actually, Conor Madden, he was the blood sub three or four times in the first half. So it was a bruising Ulster final. What are you hearing on the ground in Cavan? How's the team fixed injury-wise as they head into an All-Ireland semi-final?
So the word is very good. Cavan have a panel, I understand, of 41 and 38 of the lads are available. So the word is very, very good on the ground that a lot of players, my understanding is none of the players who were involved in just the final have any issues. They're all cleared up. There were you know, cuts and stuff like that, but there was no actual muscle injuries or impact injuries, even though it was a very, very physical affair. So a huge amount of credit has to go to the Cavan S&C coach, Andre Quinn, on that, because it was actually pointed out to me that was 10 games in 9 weeks for Cavan, the Donegal game. They played four challenge matches in the weeks building up to the Kildare and Roscommon league games, and then obviously your four Ulster championship games. So, and yet the Cavan lads looked like in the last 15 minutes they had more in the tank to offer. So, no, all looks good. Thomas Galligan, while, you know, obviously little cut on his eye, I done an interview with him after the game and at the homecoming, and he was saying, yeah, well, look, I just went in, got a couple of stitches, threw on a new jersey and back out again, as if it was something you do on an average Monday morning. Like, but that's kind of the makeup of him. He'd be made of tough stuff. So I think Cavan, they're not going to have the excuses of injuries or ill effect going into this Dublin game. Obviously they have to come up another level, but the preparations, I understand, have been going quite well. They've been playing on, there's a 3G surface in Kingspan Breffni that they use for training some of the time, and they've been playing on that to try to replicate the speed that's going to be involved in the game. So no stone has been left unturned, and Cavan will go out and give it their best anyway.
Yeah, you said serious belief, as you mentioned earlier, going into the Ulster final, and of course your goalkeeper Raymond Galligan mentioned about that they needed a complete performance. You referred to it there, he's got that complete performance. Is there still that belief, do you feel, within this Cavan squad that you can get another complete performance and maybe pull off the biggest shock in championship football since Donegal beat the Dubs in 14?
Firstly, I think it would be a bigger shock if Cavan were to beat Dublin, because Donegal were after coming. You could see that Donegal team was getting there, and the evolution of the Jim McGuinness, and that was it was phenomenal stuff at that stage. I think if Cavan were to beat them, it would be an even bigger shock. There is the belief, though. There's no doubt about it. These players will believe that they're capable of going and doing it, and they have to. If you're going into a game like that and you don't believe that you're going to win, then there's no point in showing up at all. There is a confidence in the Cavan camp that Dublin haven't been tested, and that may be their opportunity. That Dublin haven't had anybody lay a glove on them since before the last lockdown. Every game has been at almost challenge match pace, and Cavan have gone to the well, have been put to the wall by Down and Monaghan in particular, and then came up against the Donegal team that they had to take it to them and done so. So there's definitely confidence is high in the Cavan team, but there's no doubt about it. Even if Donegal were facing Dublin this weekend, which most people were expecting, Donegal would have been underdogs, and quite substantially underdogs. So there's no doubt about it. Cavan are underdogs, but there's a confidence within the group that they can go out and if they can get them to the final quarter in touching distance, that they'll believe they can rattle this Dublin team.
Yeah, I suppose the last thing that you want as a Cavan supporter, and the last thing Mickey Graham will want, is Dublin getting off to a really, really good start, because if they do that, it could be lights out very early on, Damien.
That's it. And had it happened against Donegal, it would have been the same. Yeah. And that's something that the Cavan lads are very, very aware of, that they were going into that game against Donegal knowing they had to start at lightning pace. They had to put Donegal on the back foot if they had any chance, because when the favourites and a heavy favourite gets their foot on your throat, the confidence goes to another level, and it's very, very hard to shift that momentum. So as underdogs, you've got to get off to a good start, and that's going to be crucial for Cavan. If Dublin go 5, 6, 7, 8 points up in the first quarter, it's lights out. You just won't beat this Dublin team from that position, or if you do, it'll be the most dangerous roller coaster we've ever been on.
Just a note on taking the game out of Croke Park. Cavan came out earlier this week and said that they did not press or they did not go to Croke Park to look to take the semi final away from GAA headquarters. It's not going to, if that was to happen, it wasn't going to give Cavan a massive advantage, but it was going to probably lessen the advantage that Dublin would have, given that Croke Park is seen as their home. Would you agree with Cavan's stance on that?
I can see both sides of it. To take Dublin out of Croke Park would be a leveler for me personally. And talking with I think I'm doing for the local radio here for Northern Sound. I was talking to former Dublin manager Pillar Caffrey and to Kieran Whelan, and they were saying that Croke Park is a huge advantage for Dublin in every single game, and to play there week in, week out, to get used, the way Pillar described it to me was, you know, you have to put at least 5 metres more onto every kick. Every shot that you take, you've got to get those extra 5 metres to get it over the bar in Croke Park. And it's very deceiving. So, you know, that from a Cavan point of view, I personally think that it being out of Croke Park would have been a leveller. But the Cavan point of view and the Cavan management point of view was that it was going to be in Croke Park, and there's no point in giving the Dubs any fuel to say, oh, Cavan are afraid to play us up here. Or even if it did actually come out of Croke Park, that then Dublin are extremely motivated to go and prove that they can beat Cavan in a provincial venue. So I think the Cavan camp, what they wanted to do was just put water all over the fire straight away, keep it nice and low-key. Nobody's talking about Cavan. Nobody's giving them a chance. And they're going in as underdogs the way they wanted to go in. And it's a very low-key build-up to this semi-final. So I can see why Cavan went the way they went. Having said that, I'd much prefer to be playing. I'd have loved if Croke Park, if the GAA had come out and simply said, well, Cavan didn't make this approach, but we're moving it to Park Tolchin. That's, or actually, go back to the Letic grounds. We've got great memories. So anywhere, if they'd moved it somewhere outside, I'd have loved if the GAA had made that call. I think it would have been a fairer way to play the game, but it was never Cavan's call to make. And Cavan, I think, done the right thing in not adding fuel to the fire.
Yeah. It's been a very strange year, Damien. Obviously, with the pandemic, we've seen what Tipperary done. We've seen what Cavan done. Is the strangeness of 2020, do you feel, going to continue this weekend with some more sharp results?
Yeah, I was talking to a couple of the parents earlier on of Cavan players, and they were just saying, like, that with all that has gone on in the pandemic and all of the emotion that's around it, you know, why can't we have the lows of 2020 completely nullified by the highs of beating the Dubs in an All-Ireland semi-final. So look, at this year, could anybody actually state with certainty that the possibility of the probably the greatest upset in GAA history coming off, would anybody bet against it happening? I personally think there's a possibility, and I live in hope, and I live in the world where Cavan always have a chance. More often than not, I'm wrong, but I fancy it. I just think there's something going to happen in this game that may shock Dublin. And can Dublin with the absence of a lot of players like Jack McCaffrey and Keane O'Sullivan that we haven't seen, huge players for them, Dermot Connolly to come off the bench like for them, with the absence of those boys, have the rest of them, has the McDades and the Smalls and these lads really been tested? Bogler, I'm just not sure, and I hope the Cavan go out and test them.
Have they been pushed around a football pitch properly by an Ulster team yet this year? So that's the question, Damien, and if he can do that, will he be allowed to get away with it as well, the other question?
Well, look, and again, I think this is a strange appointment, putting an Ulster referee onto the game. And don't get me wrong, I don't think Kieran Brannigan can be a very good referee, but I think it puts pressure on the referee to either, you know, referee the game to not to be seen to be biased towards his provincial side. I think it's a very strange call, but Dublin definitely haven't been pushed around. They definitely haven't had somebody really put the gun to their head and say, have you got the guts to come at this? Are you willing to fight for every single ball? And if Cavan do that, I think we'll cause Dublin a lot of problems, because it's very hard to prepare yourself for a battle when you haven't been in a battle in quite some time. And Dublin are definitely going into this game without any battles so far. So hopefully Cavan bring it.
Yeah, well, listen, we know what it's like with the rest of the country behind you when you go to take on the Dubs. This time around, the rest of the country seems to be behind Cavan as you head into that All-Ireland semi-final. I hope you're right, Damien. Everybody else hopes you're right as well. You may pull off a shock. Everybody's head sort of saying Dublin, but the heart's all going with Cavan. All we can do is wish you the best of luck this weekend in the semi-final.
Appreciate it, Rushing. Thanks very much.
Damien Donoghue of Shannon Side FM and the We Are Cavan podcast. Martin McHugh also joins me to look ahead to the weekend's games and the talk about the stories on the GAA front from this week. Martin, we heard Damien say there that Cavan have to believe that they can beat Dublin. Can they beat Dublin?
Well, they have to believe they can beat Dublin. I suppose they're looking at maybe 2014 when Donegal went down given no chance and they ended up beating Dublin. And I was in Cavan there working during the week, Oisin, and the feeling down there is this Dublin team hasn't been tested now, or Cavan good enough themselves to test them or not. And they feel that it was the exact same thing as 2014 with Donegal, where they weren't really tested going down. Everybody thought this team were unbeatable. That's the way everybody's saying about it at the minute. But I just feel that the only team that will beat Dublin this year is Dublin themselves. So, you know, so if a team is capable of putting pressure on them or not, how they'll react to that and everything else. So, but the buzz in Cavan was great and everything else, and they're really looking forward to it. And it's a big, big test for them.
Yeah, big test, but it's great for a county like Cavan to be in the position that they're in. Obviously, we're very disappointed, Martin, we didn't get there. The other game this weekend, Martin, is Tipperary against Mayo. Are Tipperary better placed in their game than what Cavan are going into their match with Dublin?
Well, you'd feel that if anybody's playing Dublin, they're under pressure. That's understandable enough. And looking at Tipperary and Mayo, you have to give a lot of credit to James Horan first, Oisin. He's rebuilding the team. You know, he's a lot of the older fellas there, but he's completely rebuilt the team, you know, maybe say about 5-6 players that maybe have never even played in Croke Park that's going to be playing with them on the Sunday. So that's great credit to Mayo for doing that basically overnight in 2 years that he's done that. And from Tipperary's point of view, you know, there'll be massive buzz and everything else. It is a hurling county and everything else, but they've got the two big players as Conor Sweeney and Michael Quinlivan. I think Cork put two under-20s on them, which was a mistake, and they were allowed run of the pitch in the first half particularly. I mean, it's going to be probably Lee Keegan and Padraig Durkin that will pick them up from a Mayo point of view, and that they're two very experienced players, and you feel that they'll not get the same space and everything in Croke Park and everything else. Midfield will be important. Aidan O'Shea will not be probably playing a full forward. A lot of Mayo people tell you maybe Aidan O'Shea is better at full forward because he holds up the ball out the field and everything else. He's a big, big player for them. They haven't a lot of pace in their forward line, but they've a lot of physical power in the forward line. They're experienced and everything else, and I expect Mayo to do enough on Quinlivan and Sweeney to hold them to a couple of points from play in the game, and that they'll get over the line with Killian O'Connor playing well.
You're thinking like everybody else then, it's going to be a Mayo Dublin All-Ireland final again?
Yeah, I'm thinking that probably that's what's going to happen. That'll be Mayo Dublin All-Ireland final. You feel that, you know, will Cavan be happy enough if they come get it within maybe 10 points? I think they'll be happy enough, and that'll be a brilliant year for them. But I was just looking at stats last night from Cavan's point of view. In the first half of the games in the four Ulster Championship games, they've conceded 235. And in the second half, they've conceded 12 points. Now, I think, and other than the Donegal Ulster final and the other games they defended, They played with big numbers back in the first half and still conceded a lot. Where in the second half they pushed up. And I mean, two of them teams were Division 1, Monaghan and Cavan. Or sorry, Monaghan and Donegal were two Division 1 teams. So you'd have to look at that stat that they'd be happy enough with what they've achieved. They've beaten two Division 1 teams. There's only one left, it's Dublin left. Now. So they played them in 2014 under 21, where there were about 7 or 8 players on both teams playing. It ended up 12 points to 11, and Cavan were disappointed in the end of the game. Or controversy with the referee and everything else. So Cavan feel they have a chance, but I think this is the greatest team I've ever seen playing Gaelic football in this Dublin team. And I go back to what I said to you at the start, the only team that's going to beat Dublin this year is Dublin themselves.
Let's look at some of the other GAA stories, Martin, from this week. Alas, we're going to get a minor championship. It's good now that Luke Bard and his management team and his players have a focused date where they can plan now. A big game for them coming up against Tyrone.
Yeah, it is. First of all, it's great. You know, they've been training and they didn't know where they stood and everything else, and nobody's able to tell them what was going on and everything else. So it's great for them, that for the young lads and everything else, that they know they had a tough year for young people. It's been a tough year for everybody, but particularly for young people. So it's great for them. They have a date to focus on now, the big game against Tyrone. It's Donegal and Tyrone again. We can't get away from these Tyrone ones at any level we meet the machine. So, but I think it's great and it's looking forward to it. For everybody, it's great out there. And, you know, there has been a couple of minor games played, but there was a big one that was played, was that Meath hammered Dublin in the first round of the minor championship. Yeah. So, you know, they're probably glad anyway, Meath, that this is going ahead. They feel they have a great chance of winning the All-Ireland and everything else point of view. But Ulster teams will be hard to beat. So, yeah, it's great and everything else. And we know that there's a lot of work going into that minor team. Luke Barrett and his background team are putting a lot of work. So, please God, they'll get over the line against Tyrone and keep improving. Yeah. It's kind of a bit of lottery because you don't know. You hadn't had matches and everything else. Probably looking for challenge games now and everything else. You don't know. But it's good that it's been played anyway. Yeah. That's the important thing.
And it is a sticky time of year to be playing football in December, but they now know they will see some action later in this month. The under 20 final, Galway against Dublin, that's going to be played as well. It's going to be the warm up to the All-Ireland final on the weekend of the 20th too. Just on 20s football, Paddy Bradley appointed the new Derry manager. He's taken over from Mickey Donnelly, who had provincial success in 2018. What did you make of the news, Martin, that Bradley's in there now in charge of a young Derry side?
I think it's a great appointment for Derry. I actually worked with Paddy in the BBC, and his knowledge of football is unbelievable. His ability to look at games, especially during the game, which is the big one when you're sitting there and the game is to be analysed during the game, and he's very good at it. So I think it's a great appointment, and he's Johnny McGurk, an All-Ireland winner, is in with him as well beside him. So I think that's a good appointment for Derry. I mean, if you look up to anybody, them Derry players will definitely look up to Paddy.
The GAA, Martin, are hoping to confirm a structure of some sort for next year. At the end of this week or maybe the start of next week. There's nothing concrete down there yet. There's different rumours going around that they were going to start the league a wee bit earlier and run it off and then the championship and then in the club. That seems to be flipped now. There's talk, Martin, that we could be starting the club before championship. All-Ireland final might be back to October time. Where do you think it's at the moment and where are they going to go with it? Or is it just still up there hanging in the air and nobody knows what sort of structure is going to be in place?
Yeah, well, I think it is hanging in the air at the minute. I mean, if you talk to different people, they're saying that some people saying it looks like the club is going to go first. And I mean, that's maybe from a financial point of view, that's where the GAA are looking at this, that they feel that later on in the year that the vaccine has been there and everything has opened up again and there'll be bigger crowds going to the inter-county matches and everything else. And that's why they're talking about the All-Ireland final in October. Where in the other system, they're saying to have the All-Ireland final in July. And I think that's the best system. I think that's the system we should go with. As have the county football first and then the club coming in later, because it'd be very, very unfair in clubs to ask them to start getting ready this early in the year and then it'll be over very, very early. And you know, what else are they to do then from a club player point of view? And I mean, there's 95%, 96% of players playing club football in the country, and there's only them lucky percent playing county. The other thing from an inter-county point of view, it meant that inter-county, probably no inter-county teams, there are actually some of them started training already for next year. So they'll be getting ready very early in the year, you know, training. They're going to train right through to end up, you know, that there. So it doesn't look, I think the best system is the system they've come up with. I know they're looking at maybe for a student for this year because of the COVID and everything else, but I think they should stick to the system they're going with and just take the financial losses from a GA point of view this year.
Can they sustain then more losses next year off the back of this year?
Well, it just depends on what, you know, looking at how we don't know. So nobody knows. I mean, maybe the whole thing, hopefully, please God, will be opened up by Easter and things will be back. It'll be back that we're allowed full houses at matches and everything else and they can look at that. I think that, I don't think clubs will be happy with it. And I don't even think counties will be happy with it. I think they would prefer to stick the way it is, because in fairness to county boards, they have to run the club. The club is the most important thing for them to run and everything else. So I think I would say just go with what we have and take the losses.
Who's going to have the final say on it?
Well, it'll come down to central council and everything else. Yeah. And I'm taking there'll be a vote to Congress on it. I would think it'll have to be passed to Congress. But I mean, it's confusing when they put out first that the All Ireland final is going to be in July and everything's going in. Then all of a sudden they go and they have a central council meeting, and this comes out from the central council meeting that they're thinking of changing it. You know, to say that we're going to play club football first, with the other system saying we're going to play club football second. I don't know. So it's confusing.
Listen, you could have the 2020 Donegal Senior Football Final at the end of January and then start the 2021 Championship in mid-February.
That's very possible that could happen. You could have we could have the two Donegal finals and played within a lock a month of each other, the way they're talking there at the minute. That's very, very possible that could happen. That could definitely happen. There's no doubt about it.
Listen, Martin, as always, thanks for joining us on The Score tonight.
Thank you.
Ahead of the game with Leon Blanche in association with Boyle Sports.
So, moving into Ahead of the Game with Leon Blanche, Mr. Blanche of Boyle Sports, you're welcome back to The Score programme.
How are you, Oisín?
It's going to be cold this weekend for these All-Ireland semi-finals. So it is, Leon. Obviously, Dublin and Mayo are seen as hot favourites. Cavan and Tipperary go in as huge underdogs. You weren't too far away last week. You were tipping Waterford to pull it off against Kilkenny. And that's what happened. Can you be right this weekend?
Well, I mean, I hope so. From a Dublin perspective, Oisín, I think Cavan, look, they're in bonus territory now. They're Ulster champions, which was a big shock. I don't think Donegal performed to their capabilities, but you've got to give Cavan a bit of credit. They were down to 14 men twice in the game in both halves. They certainly learned from that first half black card when they were outscored 7-1 by Donegal. So they definitely didn't concede that many scores the second time around, and they were full value for their victory. However, Dublin put in a performance, I think, against Meath the night before that Ulster final that just, it kind of blew everybody away in terms of, I haven't seen such a demolition from a Dublin side against Meath in a long, long time. And I think it all comes about because of the competition for places. And whoever gets that starting jersey in that first 15, they're trying their best, their utmost to try and hold on to that jersey because they know what's coming behind them. I mean, the likes of Paul Mannion, Cormac Costello, Brian Howard, they probably won't even get into the first 15. And when you think about that calibre of footballer, they'd get into any other inter-county side. So for me, Dublin, I think, will beat Cavan. It's a 13-point handicap. And do you know something? I think Cavan will get under that. I hope they do. I hope they really put it up to Dublin. And the one thing I hope from a Cavan perspective is, get in the Dubs' faces. Don't give them the time. Don't give them the space that Meade afforded them. And you saw how deadly Stephen Cluxton is. And it is a bit of a risk if you push up on his kickouts. But I think you're going to have to. You're going to have to try something different. If you sit off, Dublin will tear you apart, as they have done over the years to many, many teams. But Dublin to win for me, but Cavan to get under the handicap. The second semi-final, from my perspective, is an entirely different game. This is one I'm really, really looking forward to. And Mayo, they've been just getting the job done, Oisín. They're a very physical side, but they're also a very efficient side. And I think this time of year certainly plays to Mayo's strengths. But they're coming up against a Tipperary team who, similar to Cavan, in my opinion, are worthy Munster champions. I don't think anybody can say it was a fluke how they defeated Cork. They went into that game as underdog. They'll go into this semi-final as underdog. And there's a couple of big players who I've been really impressed with from a Tipperary perspective. I think Conor Sweeney has been exceptional. Michael Quinlivan, we all know how talented he is. He's one of the best forwards in the country, as far as I'm concerned. And a big plus for Tipperary is Colin O'Riordan. The Sydney Swans have allowed him to stay on and play for his county in an All-Ireland semi-final. Now, Mayo are favourites, and probably more down to their experience and more down to their kind of know-how. Tommy Conroy is a big player for them. A lot of people are tipping him up to score the first goal of the game. He's 11-2 to do that. But I just think Tipperary without any fans, and I think this is crucial for Tipperary, and the reason I say this is I've been to a couple of All-Ireland finals and Mayo people would outnumber even Dublin people in Croke Park. And I just feel with this Tipperary side, it's their first semi-final. It's only 15 men against 15 men. There's no fans. And that should help Tipperary. I don't know whether they can beat Mayo Oisín, but I'll tell you what, I think Tipperary getting 4 points of a head start in the handicap betting, I think that's the way if you're interested in the second semi-final. This one could be a really, really close encounter. It's going to be dry in Croke Park. It's going to be cold. But I think the likes of Quinlivan, I think even looking at Sweeney, they can kick long distance points. And this could play a huge part in Tipperary in this All-Ireland semi-final. I'm really looking forward to the second one on Sunday.
So moving on to the Premier League matches this weekend, four games on Saturday. Suppose the standout tie of the four is West Ham against Manchester United. Both teams in the last 4 to 5 weeks have had good form in the league, that is. But United are going under this one off the back of a defeat at the hands of PSG during the week.
Yeah, look, and a lot of question marks around Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I watched the game. I was absolutely amazed in the first instance that Fred wasn't sent off. When he got the yellow card and when they got to halftime, there's no doubt in my mind Solskjaer made a mistake. Fred should have been substituted at halftime to give yourself a chance with 11 v 11. He was an accident waiting to happen, and that accident did happen. However, Man United have won their first four Premier League games away from home, and they were really good against Southampton. They were actually very good in the first half, even though they went in 2-0 down. He made a couple of changes. Most notably, Cavani came on and scored two brilliant headers. Absolutely, the movement in the box. Any young kid out there who watches football, watch Cavani. Watch how he never stays still. He's not the biggest in the world, but he's always on the move. He was very unlucky not to score a beautiful goal against PSG that came back off the crossbar. West Ham have started very well, as you rightly said. They were a little bit, well, not a little bit, they were very lucky against Aston Villa. Villa missed a penalty. They had a goal ruled out for offside, which was absolutely farcical. It should have been another penalty for Villa. But West Ham, it's good to win when you don't play well. And West Ham have a good record against Manchester United. United are the favourites at even money. But I'll tell you something, I think West Ham are good enough to get a share of the spoils. I'm going to go for the draw here at 13-5.
Tottenham against Arsenal is probably the standout game on Sunday, and Tottenham are at home. It's a North London derby. If you looked at the results, you would see that Spurs would probably be red-hot favourites for this one, given their form in the league. But it's a derby in London. Anything can happen. It's Spurs against the Gunners, but Tottenham will be looking to maintain their, I suppose, their position at the top of the table in this one, so they will be on.
Absolutely, and you know what, they've started really well, and it was interesting hearing Mourinho's comments, and I know he says a lot to kind of play up to the camera, but I actually took him for face value when he said against Chelsea that his players were disappointed coming away from Stamford Bridge with a point. And that kind of goes to show you maybe the mentality is just changing a little bit at Spurs, and I think Mourinho's had a very good transfer window, bringing on Doherty. Obviously, he signed Gareth Bale on loan, but probably the best signing of the season, or one of them anyway, is Højbjerg as the holding midfielder. He got him off Southampton for 15 million, and he's just added a little bit of extra steel to the Tottenham Hotspur midfield. Arsenal, on the other hand, there's big problems. There is big, big problems at Arsenal, and Mikel Arteta, I think the honeymoon is over, and I think the pressure is starting to really mount. Look, They were well beaten by Wolves in their last Premier League game. Wolves had ample opportunities to score plenty of goals. They didn't score enough, but they still got the job done and won 2-1. I've got to be for Spurs here, Roisin. I think it's a Spurs win. Look, we've got a great little offer on this one. Bet €10, and if your bet loses in this particular game, we'll give it back to you as a free bet. I think if you picked Harry Kane to score first, you could do a lot worse. But I do feel Tottenham Hotspur will look at this game. It's up against their bitter rivals, and they'll fancy themselves to get all 3 points. They're just a shade worse than even money at 20-21.
You mentioned Haaland being the signing of the season for Spurs. There's no doubt Liverpool's signing of the season is Jota. He's come from Wolverhampton Wanderers. Wolves have won five of their 10 games so far. Just one less than the defending champions, Liverpool. But I'm sure everybody's going to be watching Jota come this weekend to see if he's going to step up against his old club.
Absolutely. And look, I think he's become the first Liverpool player in history to score in his first four home league games. So he's got a chance here now to score in five in a row. But Wolves, as you rightly said, they're a really exciting team. Obviously, our best wishes go to Raul Jimenez, who, of course, had that very nasty head injury against Arsenal. He won't be playing. But Jota has seemed to just fit into Liverpool effortlessly. The likes of Mane, he's off form a little bit. Salah missed a couple of chances against Ajax. And even Firmino, when he came off the bench for Jota, he actually missed a couple of chances as well. But from watching football as you do and I do down through the years, more often than not, when a former player comes up against their former club, they normally get on the score sheet if they're a striker. And Jota, he's 9-2 to score first. He's 5-4 to score at any time. I would be amazed if Jurgen Klopp doesn't start him. Liverpool, I must give a very notable mention to Irish goalkeeper from Cork, Caoimhín Kelleher. I thought his shot-stopping was never in doubt, but I thought his distribution with the football against Ajax was absolutely world-class, and a big, big night it was for that young guy. He's only 22 years of age. He's going to be in goal once again on Sunday because Alisson will be out. Here's hoping that we get a really good Irish goalkeeper for the future. He's only 22. I think he's got everything that you require in terms of the size and the stature of the man. And I think Jurgen Klopp has shown a lot of faith in him. But for this game, I think Wolves are capable of scoring. I think Liverpool are capable of scoring. But you go back to Liverpool's record in the Premier League. I think it's 63 or 64 matches unbeaten at home. It has to go sometime, but I don't think it's going to be Sunday night. Liverpool to win and both teams to score for me.
Just finally then, Leon, let's go into Scotland. Celtic and Rangers, of course, battling it out for the title. Rangers have a big lead over them at the minute. Celtic are playing St Johnstone on Sunday. Should another result go against Celtic, this time next week when we're speaking, would Neil Lennon still be in a job?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think, look, obviously results have not been going well. That's an obvious statement. But I think all the kind of talk about Lennon and wanting him out, I think it's a bit premature. Look, I think we've got to give the man a little bit of time. He was a remarkable player. He's been a remarkable manager. And yes, okay, they're going for the 10 in a row, which obviously has all that added pressure. Now, I'm looking at the table, and I say to myself, Rangers are 11 points clear of Celtic. But there's a big thing that I think people are missing. Celtic have got two games in hand. If they win them two games in hand, which they're well capable of doing, they only trail Rangers by 5 points. There's still three Old Firm matches to go in this season. So all is not lost for Neil Lennon. And I think people need to realise he doesn't become a bad manager in a space of 3 or 4 weeks. You've got to give him a little bit of time. There's no doubt in my mind this is a huge game. Celtic play St Johnstone, and Ross County, who of course knocked Celtic out of the League Cup last weekend, they're at home to Rangers. Maybe, just maybe, Lightning will strike twice. Ross County will beat Rangers. Celtic will beat St Johnstone. There'll be 8 points between them with two games in hand. And all this talk about getting rid of Neil Lennon will be pie in the sky. I hope for Lennon, some of his players pull up their socks, put in a big performance, show their manager why they're at the club, and show their manager that they believe in him. And that's what Celtic players need to do from now till the end of the season. I actually think there's not that many people who'd want to go up to Celtic at the moment, the way Rangers are playing. It's almost like if you take over from Lennon and you don't stop, or you don't win the 10 in a row, where does that leave you as a manager? So I think actually Neil Lennon should be given a bit of time, and I think he will be given a bit of time.
If he was to go and it does go against Lennon and he does get the sack, who's the front runners at the moment, Leon?
Yeah, look, I mean, Martin O'Neill is favourite, and he's obviously had a tremendous managerial career, most notably up in Glasgow. He was a huge success, and he's favourite. And then you've got Jack Ross, the ex-Sunderland manager, who is a Scottish man. Eddie Howe was an interesting one. Look, obviously, he done a tremendous job at Bournemouth. Probably he kept him in the Premier League longer than was actually expected. They're playing well in the Championship now. They're probably going to get promoted back up to the Premier League. And then you're liking the likes of John Kennedy or Gordon Strachan. I can't see that happening. I think it's actually probably between the front three and the betting. I think Celtic fans would probably go for Martin O'Neill because he knows what it's about up in Glasgow. It is a bit of a fishbowl. It's Celtic against Rangers. A draw sometimes is a horrible result. You're under pressure. So he knows all about what it takes to win up there. But as I said earlier, I just hope Celtic Football Club remember how good Neil Lennon has been as a manager and as a player, probably less important as a player. But his managerial record up there is still phenomenal. They're going to play Hearts in that delayed Scottish Cup final. If he can win that, it's another bit of silverware. And I just hope Lennon gets time. I think he deserves that.
Okay, super stuff. Leon Blanche, as always, many thanks for joining us on The Score.
All the best, Oisin.
Ahead of the game with Leon Blanche in association with Boyle Sports.
We will, of course, have another Ahead of the Game section with Leon next Thursday night. Just a note in soccer, Finn Harps have tied down their fourth signing in recent weeks. The Tyrconnell Tribune were reporting today that a Melton man, Tony McNamee, has signed on for another year at Finn Park. Just last week, his brother Barry committed to another season under Ollie Horgan. Mark Timlin and Shane McElhinney also, of course, signed up this week with the Ballybuffet Blues. And that's it for another edition of The Score. If you missed any of tonight's show, you can, of course, listen back in the playback section on highlandradio.com just after the 8 o'clock news. I'll be back with our next sports bulletin tomorrow morning. So until then, enjoy the rest of your Thursday evening.
Sport on Highland brought to you by Cash for Clubs at Michaelmurphy Sports and Leisure, the new loyalty scheme that rewards your club every time you shop online at michaelmurphysports.ie.